flat is a state of mind. Get to know the people, science, and stories that make the Kansas outdoors more than flyover country. This is Flatlander Podcast, presented by the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks and the Kansas Wildlife Federation. What I see on my journey is indescribable as the Bible.
Hey, all. Welcome back to Life in the Flatlands. I'm one of your hosts, Tana.
I'm Nadia.
And we are so excited to have you join us today. So you all have heard us talk about R3 before, and R3 stands for recruitment, retention, and reactivation. And when we're talking about recruiting and retaining people, especially to hunting in the outdoors, one of the biggest barriers reported on surveys, both at the national and local level, is not having anywhere to hunt. This is especially important in Kansas, which is a state that is 98% privately owned. So we are so excited to bring to the mic today a special guest that we like to think of as a champion of R3, a champion of public land and land access. He is the Public Lands Regional Supervisor for Northwest Kansas and started with our agency in 1982. So we are so excited to introduce this guest, Mr. Mike Nyhoff. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Tana. Thank you, Nadia.
We are so excited about this topic. Now, something I will mention is Tana said lack of access, right? Or sometimes it's just perceived lack of access. So that is why we are so excited to talk about the Special Hunts Program with Wildlife and Parks, because what this does is it connects our hunters with not only access, but some pretty good access. And we're going to talk about why it is so very special.
Absolutely. And Mike, you've celebrated a 40-year career with us. So in that time, you've done a lot of incredible things, and Special Hunts is only just one of them. So as we get started, can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about you and your career? And then we'll get into exactly what that Special Hunts program is.
I can. I started in, a long time ago, before some of you guys were born. But I've always been in public land, started at a state fishing lake in Washington County, and went to Wilson Reservoir for a couple of years, was at Glen Elder Wildlife Area for 25 years, and then moved to the regional office in Hays for the last 11 or 12, whatever that was. So been a long, good career, and seen a lot of things change. Computers came on since I was here.
Love it.
And smartphones, and on it goes. But the Special Hunt program was when I was at Glen Elder. Glen Elder State Park had a tremendous number of pheasants, and it wasn't all my idea. I implemented, we had a supervisor named Bruce Taggart, and I consider him the grandfather of special hunts. And Bruce saw the opportunity. The Glen Elder State Park was an area that was not open to hunting. And he said, we've got this opportunity. Why can't we open it up, limited, and have a good experience? And Bruce's quote was, we're talking about R3, if we can give one person a good experience once a year, they will continue hunting. No matter, you know, what happens, if they can come out and they have a good experience, they're likely to continue on. And I've taken it from there. So we started in 1989 with the special hunts at Glen Elder for pheasants. We did it locally. Then it turned into a statewide program. Regionally first, and what we said was there are properties, whether it's a state park, whether it's a refuge on a wildlife area where no one is allowed, mm-hmm. Why can't we have a little bit of hunting going on in there? So it just has gone from there, and today we're statewide. We have all types of different properties. We have, between the spring turkey hunting and the fall hunting, we've got pretty close to 1,000 different hunts going on. 1,000 different people we can get out there hunting.
That's amazing. I think a lot of listeners can probably relate to me, where you've been out on a hunt, you've seen a parcel of land, it's not open to hunting, and all you can think of is, man, if I could just get access to there, I would have limited it out 2 hours ago. So I think it's so cool that that's kind of how this program got birthed, by that idea of why can't we? Why not? Right. So that's pretty cool.
And as a fairly new hunter too, what I find so intriguing about this program is that it is that limited access. So something that can feel really intimidating when going onto a piece of public land as a new hunter or even a seasoned hunter is not knowing who else is in the area, if you could potentially be in the line of someone else who's trying to take a deer with a rifle. And that can feel a little bit scary. So I love that these special hunts provide an opportunity. If you are a mentor taking someone new, it's a little bit more of a controlled space. It's an area where you have a better idea of what's going on around you, can feel maybe even a little more comfortable.
I think that's absolutely correct. People just are worried about getting overcrowded. People worried about somebody else getting in their way. And so that opportunity is there through it. But as well for department people in public lands, in parks, and whatever else, it is controlled for them as well. They know who's on the property. Some of our state parks, Corps of Engineers have facilities that they don't want everybody out there shooting them up and stuff. So they come in and they now know who's there, what days they're there, what hours they're there. And the hunts are all different types of things. Some of them are more set up and mentored with blinds and everything else. And the vast majority of them are, you got the permit, you just go and hunt. And so there's a variety of different types too.
Yeah. So Mike, why don't we tell folks, how is it you guys are able to, or we, I should say, are able to obtain access? I mean, we obviously, there's a myriad of locations that we have, like you said, whether it's refuges, it could be department owned lands. How are we able to make that happen? Are we just calling people up and saying, hey, we want to do this? Or is there some secret method that's being used?
I wish there was a secret to it, but it's talking to the managing people, whether it's in our agency, we have, biologists that have a private piece of land that the landowner does not want everybody on that land. We have public land managers that say, I don't want everybody out on this refuge. It's there for a sanctuary for wildlife,
right?
But we can still do it. It's the initiative of our people and those people. We have cities that have parks and stuff, and they've let hunting in there. They have a deer population that's overcrowding and too many. So they set it up and they're talking to our biologists about, what are we going to do about these deer? The biologist says, we've got a program for you to be able to do that. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at their refuges in Kansas, they also want to allow some hunting, but they don't want to have it unlimited hunting. So generally it's just word of mouth getting through that. And I think in Kansas, there's a tremendous number of places that are not in the program that we could still add into it.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that because we're utilizing, it sounds like, local staff to make those connections, that having a pre-existing relationship is really important? Or sometimes are they meeting these people for the first time and making that ask?
Sometimes they're making that ask at the first time. I mean, it's not really a cold call. We get that concern that maybe they having an issue with trespass. Maybe they're having an issue with too many deer on their property. And then our guys go, well, here's an option for you. Mm-hmm. Rather than just putting up with it or dealing with it, here's an option. We can control things. We can help population management. We can do a lot of different things.
So Mike, when people think about some of our limited access hunts, another program that comes to mind often, especially in urban areas, is our IWEHA opportunities. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between IWEHA and our special hunts program?
I can. The IWEHA, it's a check-in, check-out. The IWEHA is private land that our biologists, our wildlife division sets up, and we lease from the landowner to allow access. Everybody knows about our walk-in hunting access program, the WEHA, and this is a takeoff of that. In eastern Kansas, we could never get walk-in hunting areas because the landowners is more populated. The landowners did not want to have everybody running on their property. So they were signing it up saying, you know what, we'll allow three people a week or one group a day or something like that. And they'll come out and you go in and check in and out. It's by reservation, not reservation. It's a first come, first serve checking in to do it. Special hunts on those private lands, we started with that. When the wildlife biologists started, they did special hunts on them. And what we found is that our application period for special hunts, we do it three times a year, and sometimes something comes up and they don't go hunting. And when you apply for a hunt in August for December, things change. The wildlife guys said, What if we just had it, you can do it the day before. And so if you happen to be driving by an IWEHA and it's not occupied, you make that check in and you're in there. So it's just more easy access. It's not the long-term reservation that we have at Special Hunts.
Yeah, I love that hunters can kind of benefit from both and kind of mix and match, like you said, to accommodate their schedules and just what's going on that year.
So you talked about with Special Hunts how that is kind of a reservation in advance system. So that's a program that folks apply for. Can you talk us a little bit through that application process?
Yeah, we actually have spring turkey hunts. And so that'll be the next one coming up as we go through it. So in February, we have our managers enter in the hunts that they're going to do, and we start the application period in March so that we have the drawing for that before the season, about, you know, 3 weeks before the season. They have to apply by a certain date, and those are on our website, the Special Hunts Information website. They have to apply by that date. We do a random computer drawing, and then they're notified whether they're successful or not. In the fall, we actually have three different drawings now. Hunts that start in September and October, we draw in August. Hunts that begin in November and December, we draw in the end of September. And then we started a new one this year, hunts in January. And sometimes we have hunts going into February. That drawing is going to be, well, next Monday will be our one for this year. So in the middle of December is when we're drawing there for that.
So if that doesn't already sell you on the opportunities, given how many months this covers, I'll have to tell our listeners, I did a little bit of research prior to us doing this recording, and just in our fall and winter alone, so that's not including the spring opportunities that Mike just talked about, 400 special hunts. And they're all across the state, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
That's amazing.
And the thing that is more than that, Nadia, is that those 400 and some hunts, some of those hunts allow five people to go on that hunt. Some of those hunts have six permits, you know, throughout the season. So, again, you total that up. There's 700, 800 different hunts, different permits available. At Meredosine National Wildlife Refuge itself, they have 75 permits. So that's one hunt with 75 archers that can go out there and hunt throughout the whole season.
Incredible. So let's talk a little bit about who can benefit from this and who can apply for these hunts. I know we kind of have them categorized, you know, whether it's for youth or it's a mentored hunt. Would you mind covering each of the types of hunts, not the species, but who can apply?
Sure. The different categories that we have, the first one I'll start out with is disabled. We don't have a lot of those hunts, but we do have some. And they're specifically designed, for instance, Marion Wildlife Area has a disability hunt for muzzleloader deer. And they set that up. Folks with mobility disabilities come out and they treat them like royalty for the days that they're out there and can be quite successful. So we have some disability hunts. Again, mobility disability is what we're looking for. And then we have youth hunts. And youth hunts are for our younger people, 18 and 17 and under, mm-hmm. Going through that. And on a youth hunt, only the youth can hunt. So they have to be accompanied by an adult, but only the youth can hunt. Then we have a mentor hunt. Mentor hunt is where youth has to be accompanied by a mentor and both of them can hunt. So it's really a neat opportunity for, you know, instead of just the youth hunting, the adult can hunt as well. And we have some of the hunts, when we call it a mentor hunt, that are actually we call them novice, right? Most of our hunts are youth mentor, but we have novice mentor hunts. And those are a person of any age that just has not hunted a species in the last 3 years is generally the deal. So if you've never hunted deer before, maybe you've hunted waterfowl or something else, you can apply for that hunt and do a deer hunt as a novice deer hunter. And so it's any age, which that's a pretty neat thing where we've got an experienced person, their significant other or some family member, families can come out and hunt together on it. So those are our mentor hunts where both the mentor and the youth can actually hunt. And then we have an open category and that's anybody, any age, any experience level can apply for those hunts.
That's awesome.
So another barrier that is sometimes cited within R3, other than not having anywhere to go, which clearly you've solved that issue, thanks, Mike, is not having anybody to go with. And so those different tiers of mentored hunts, whether it's a youth hunt with an adult that's not hunting or a mentor opportunity, I like that that provides a lot of different choice. Are there any instances where hunters apply for a hunt but need help finding a mentor?
Oh, absolutely. And depending on the property that it is set up in the hunt, we advertise right in there, if you don't have a mentor for a youth hunt, let us know. And our managers, biologists, they have connections of, maybe it's a waterfowl hunt that the local Ducks Unlimited chapter says, you got a person that's needing help, we'll be there for them. Maybe it's a mentor for a deer hunt. Our folks are just fantastic that way, our managers for it. And we will provide mentors if we can all do that. It's there for them.
That kind of gave me the chills. I was like, this is so cool.
The sense of community. I really feel it.
Exactly. Well, that's something I was thinking about was how motivated our staff are to make sure that people do in fact have a quality experience. I know I've heard from hunters who have been able to call the land manager ahead of time, and they've gone so far as to meet them at the wildlife area, wherever they're hunting, show them around, give them some tips and tricks, really be accommodating hosts. And I think that's such a neat, service that we offer.
Our folks are fantastic with that. We want people to come and have a good time. We want them to enjoy it. One of the things that is probably, is a drawback is our folks that are trying to do these hunts, they go, oh, you know what, this year there's no water. Mm. And we set up these hunts and they're not going to have, or their ducks aren't down. We're not going to have a very good hunt. And I try to tell them, I said, guys, you didn't know when you set up these hunts what the conditions were going to be like. And even if the property doesn't have very many ducks or whatever, people are still out there. And we need to go back and tell them, this is an experience to be, you're out there in a comfortable place. You are out there not being crowded. Enjoy what Kansas has. Enjoy these properties. It's not all about pulling the trigger. It's not all about put something in the bag. It's the experience of it.
Yeah. Something we talk about a lot in the agency is, when we purchase hunting and fishing licenses, we get permits as well. We're engaging in the same activities, and we have to remember that when we're buying that license, when we're buying that permit, we're not buying the animal. We're buying the opportunity and the experience. And if you get one, fantastic. If not, just like you said, there's so much more to be enjoyed out there as well. Wildlife watching, birding, kayaking. I mean, there's a myriad of things we can do outside. But yeah, that's a really neat thing to keep in mind.
If you go out on a special hunt, maybe you're on a deer hunt on one of our refuges that is primarily there for waterfowl, you're going to see tens of thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of ducks and geese flying overhead that no one else gets to see. You're that close. And whether you get a deer, whether you see a deer, the experience of just being out there in the wildlife and the nature that we have.
So when it comes to these hunts, I'm curious, which are the most popular? I mean, I imagine there's probably some hunts that guys and gals are just clamoring to apply for. And then I sometimes hear about these really neat opportunities where they're kind of surprised they don't have more applicants. So what are the most popular? And then what do you think are the most underutilized?
The most popular ones, the most popular hunt that we have is at the Meritazine National Wildlife Refuge. They offer 75 archery permits. In the spring, they have 50 turkey permits. And you can hunt any time in the whole season. Come and go. So these areas not only have the freedom to come the whole season, but Meritazine National Wildlife Refuge is known for very quality deer. And so it's the most popular and we allowed residents and non-residents to apply. And so we're getting a lot of, and it's an open hunt. So anybody can apply, and we have a lot of trophy hunters applying for those types of hunts, trying to get in on it. Grand Osage Wildlife Area down at Parsons is tremendously popular because Rob Riggin and Spencer Putman down there, they cater. I mean, it's an on-your-own hunt, but they meet you. They tell you here's the best place. They assign you locations. You've got somebody there hand in hand, and they shoot some really nice deer, and they have very good success, whether it's an antlerless hunt or whether it's a whitetail hunt. So those are very popular places. Seems like the trophy deer is a big draw. One that we have the hardest time doing it is our youth hunts.
Really?
It is unbelievable that we can't, that people are not willing to say, yeah, I'm going to take my son, my daughter, my nephew, my niece out hunting, and I'm willing to mentor them. But we just don't have that. And even when we have people sign up for the hunts, often those are the ones that get canceled. They decline because kids are busy.
Yeah.
Right. And I'd always say, I had a sleepover at my friend's house the night before and I didn't get any sleep. So when the parent, the adult comes and wake them up to go hunting, I don't feel like it. Mm. It's just the time, but the opportunity is still there. And the number of kids that are still getting out there doing that youth hunt. We have, like I said, that's probably the biggest thing that we have. They're just not willing to do that. And we have some unbelievable youth hunts that are out there for, chances for success. And that might be a waterfowl hunt. That might be deer hunts, turkey hunts, just some really neat places that are going begging because of that.
So what happens when somebody applies for a hunt, doesn't show, or calls and cancels? Is that opportunity then passed on to somebody else?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're not going to have a hunt and say, well, it just didn't get filled. We're going to do everything we can. And that's what I've been doing along with my seasonal, Tessa Diedrichsen. We go back in. If somebody declines, we go back in and we look and see how many people were unsuccessful in that draw. And we start back and we grab those people and say, you were unsuccessful before. Are you interested in this hunt? That's if we have some time to do that. We also are working with groups and organizations that, they have a core number of people. So we've gone back in and contacted Outdoor Mentors, Paso Donan Outdoor Mentors group, who have kids waiting to go on opportunities. We've contacted Wander Woman, the organization that from Kansas City area. We've gone Wilderness Women's Group. We've gone to the Fallen Outdoors Group of veterans, and we call them up and say, hey, we've got this hunt available. Are you interested? And they get out through their network of people and say, yeah, we're interested in doing that kind of stuff. We've done it, and it's all context of these different organizations. We might do a Ducks Unlimited chapter right in that area. Hey, can you get some kids out to go hunting? Yeah, we'll do that. Well, here's a hunt for you. So we do everything we can to possibly fill those canceled and declined hunts.
So word to the wise, if you are part of a conservation organization in Kansas, and this sounds pretty cool to you, go ahead and contact Wildlife and Parks and ask to speak to somebody about the special hunts program, because it sounds like there's an opportunity there.
It is. It's. We often don't have more than a day or two to try to fill these hunts. And that's where the networking of conservation groups can really come right in and grab somebody in their group.
And Mike, dare I say, this is more than, just a job for you. This is a passion project of yours. And I feel like I can say that because I look up to you personally, as a mentor, both within work and outside of work. And I think it's so cool, the heart and soul that you've put into this program. So I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you. It is a passion. When I get the pictures and reports and comments back on special hunts, it's our managers that are putting on the hunts. It's our biologists. It's the people working in the counties and all of that are putting on these hunts. They're offering up their opportunity. I just coordinate, right? It's not, but I guess that's how I live is through what they do. Some of these places I haven't ever been to that are offering special hunts. I've never been there, but it sounds like a neat opportunity to me.
Yeah. Well, there's your retirement plan. Apply each year to special hunts.
I plan on visiting some of these places for sure.
So not to be a Debbie Downer, but hindsight's always 20/20. So now that you're at this point where you're going to be starting the next chapter in life, thinking back to the Special Hunts program, anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, not had other jobs to do and been able to focus just on Special Hunts. In my travels around the state, we have many of our properties. We have many, whether it's county or state owned properties that there would offer unbelievable limited access to, unbelievable limited access to, and we don't offer them up because the folks in charge or whatever go, well, it's too much work for me. I don't want to do it. You talked about passion, Tana, that I have, but it's also the passion of our field staff. These field people want to do it too. And others go, it's a lot of work. And my job has been to try to make it as easy as I can. I would like to have been able to have the time to just go around and talk with property managers and say, we could do this on your property. It's not going to take your time and it would be easy. We could add, instead of 400 hunts in the fall, we could have 800 hunts in the fall and do thousands of individual permits. There's just that much property, whether it's Kansas Forest Service, Kansas State University. Fort Hays State University has a college farm, 1,000 acres out there that could have hunts. And it's just breaking through and getting a hold of the right person to be able to do those things.
Sorry, let me just wipe my mouth so I can get some of this drool off.
It's out there, Nadia. We just have to...
Let's start making some friends.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, well, Nadia brought us down a little bit, but Mike, you turned that back around. I really love that. So I get to ask now, what are you the most proud of when it comes to this program?
That it's as far as it is. You know, we started locally and I see new managers, new properties coming on. We have properties like Benedictine Bottoms that came on and we said right from the start, our whole area is nothing but Special Hunts. We're not going to just open it up unlimited, which is in my career, many times in this agency, I've heard, well, it's public land. Who cares what the success is? Who cares what it's a place for people to walk. It's just open. They can just go out there. And public land managers, property managers are going, no, that's not. We want our property to be good. And the decisions are made when we acquire a piece of property to say, we're going to limit this. Now, Benedictine Bottoms has three waterfowl hunts a week. They have three upland hunts, just different days and limited numbers of it. They have deer hunts going on at the same time, but they're all through the draw permit. And people are enjoying those opportunities. They know that there's only three other groups out there or something like that. So I guess nothing in particular is the proudest, but it's the fact that we've adapted and we've grown the program over the years.
You know, some people might be wondering, you said, you know, some days there's upland, some days there's waterfowl. So when somebody applies for a special hunt, are they told what days are going to be made open, that, you know, the land's going to be made open to them, or do they have a range, or do they get to choose? How does that work?
Depends on the hunt. Again, it is up to the land manager to decide what he or she is comfortable with. Again, the Meredosine National Wildlife Refuge issues archery deer permits, 75 of them, and it's from the very first day of archery season through the end of the year. They can go out anytime they want to do it. So there's a range of dates there. We have most of our hunts, waterfowl hunts, upland hunts, and some are one day, just a certain day, sometimes mornings only. Deer hunts are usually a couple of days. Archery deer hunts are a week long, maybe even 2 weeks long. So that's something there. But in the application, it tells you specifically what days, what is your range? Is it just one day or whatever else? Some of our managers have go the next step. They have an idea that, well, it might not work out for somebody to go on just a Saturday. So we'll give them 3 days, your choice, one day of those 3 days. And that's very innovative stuff that they've looked at because, again, not people see those dates, they see Saturday, and well, I work Saturday, But if I can go on a Sunday or if I can go on a Friday or even a Tuesday, that's really, really makes a good effort for them.
Yeah. Well, it's just like you said, you know, when you apply, your schedule might be one way, but then, you know, come time for the hunt, something's changed and what are you going to do?
Very cool. So I have to ask, when you think about the future of the Special Hunts program, especially now that you're nearing the end of your career and preparing to step away in a sense, although you did mention that you do plan to still be a part of the Special Hunts in some capacity, what do you envision for the future of the Special Hunts program? What's your greatest aspiration?
I think I mentioned it earlier, is taking advantage of more of our places that we have out here in the state, whether that's private land or public land. It's out there to make it bigger and make it, but people just think, well, it's too much work or they just haven't been contacted for it. I can see that the potential is there. My problem has always been, as my capacity as a regional supervisor, I'm supervising people. I've got properties in Northwest Kansas. I do the iSportsman. We have all of those other things going on. So it didn't have the time to actually make that much, some of those open places. And we just have resistant people too. I got to say that to some of those things. I think as we continue to move the R3 program in the state, I think then it just puts it more of a forefront to say our agency is standing right here doing everything we can. And the Special Hunts covers recruitment, it covers retention, and it covers reactivation. And so let's just build it bigger.
Yeah. To some of our land managers' defense, I'm betting it's also kind of scary too, in a sense, not terrifying, but just, you know, our guys take a lot of pride, and gals take a lot of pride in their work, and they take a lot of pride in their habitat management practices. And so I can only imagine that if your area hasn't been hunted historically, that changing that dynamic, you know, it'd be a little anxiety inducing. But it sounds like the folks who have made that leap and have invested, you know, what little time they have needed to make those Special Hunts special, they really get a lot out of it. So that would be, you know, my encouragement to the folks who haven't yet jumped on board, is that think about how fulfilling that could be to help someone get their first deer, to have a successful upland hunt with their cousin or their dad or maybe even mom too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and believe me, we've got that going on. It's neater than anything to see a mom that has never hunted, and maybe the youth has hunted before. Mom gets to go as a mentor. The youth is the actual mentor that's taking mom out there, and mom gets her first deer, and just, you know, those are the really, really cool reports that you get from those things. And I do need to do a shout out to Jason Wagner, our manager at Cheyenne Bottoms. Cheyenne Bottoms has a huge refuge out there, and we've always said refuges are places nobody can go on. It's for there. And what Jason did was he said, you know what, there is that. We can have some limited hunting going on out there. Jason has youth waterfowl hunts, and actually those are not very well applied for. You light up your eyes, Nadia.
Yeah.
And that's, you would. But then I don't know if that's, they don't know about it or whatever. But Jason has opened that up for a youth hunt. Three youth and one mentor or a couple of mentors going on. The mentors can't hunt. Only the youth can. But that's the kind of thing that I understand our folks' thoughts about it. But it just takes a little bit of thought, takes a little bit of time to say, everything is taken care of. You know who's out there. You know you're in control. Even if you wanted to have one hunt a year, that adds one or two or three more people to come out.
Yeah, this is the stuff that dreams are made of. So if you were texting somebody while this was going on or trying to cook dinner, I'm going to repeat that for you. Cheyenne Bottoms, Jason Wagner, opportunities being created on refuge areas for youth. So if you have some kiddos in your life, don't let them miss out on that opportunity. Truly once in a lifetime.
Absolutely. I like that recap.
Yeah.
Cliff notes.
Well,
version.
I mean, like Mike said, my eyes just, what do you mean they're not all being applied for? So Mike, I need to know, what's the lowdown? Are there any tips, tricks, anything that people need to know when they apply? Any special secret codes? I mean, you're talking about trophy deer hunts at Meritazine, okay? What does a hunter need to know when they're applying?
What they need to know is that it's open to everyone, resident or non-resident. The different categories are out there. We do not have a preference point system. Every drawing is on its own merit. The tip is you can't work your way into a preference point to be guaranteed a hunt. Everybody has an opportunity. The number of calls that I don't get every year saying, you need a preference point system, because I know a guy who's been hunting there 4 years in a row and I don't ever draw. I need to get a preference point so I can do that stuff. And that's the only fair way, is that what they tell me. And I tell them, we are doing the only truly fair way. Everyone has equal chance every year for each drawing that we have. And I don't think I mentioned it before, but you can apply for hunts. We have three drawings in the fall. You can apply for hunts in September and October in the first drawing. You can apply for hunts in the second drawing, November, December, and you can apply for hunts in there, and you have equal chance at, so you might get a hunt in each of those. We have waterfowl hunts, deer hunts, upland hunts, dove hunts, all of those things, and you might get one deer hunt, you might get an upland hunt, you might get a waterfowl hunt in the same year. It's just, the tip is apply. Apply. Use all of your choices. Use all of your all of the seasons, and just get your name in and apply.
And don't miss the deadline.
No kidding. That's the tip, is to put the deadlines on your calendar. Hey, Mike, real quick, is there any limit to the number of hunts you can apply for? Could I apply for hunts all across the state through the Special Hunts Program?
We limit it to three choices. Three choices for each of those drawings for each species. So if you're going to hunt deer, if you want to apply for a deer hunt, you can apply in that first drawing, hunts that begin in September, October. You have three choices, one first choice, second choice, and third choice. Well, I can tell you that on Meredosine National Wildlife Refuge, they don't ever get down to second choices because there's enough first choice people. So you can have a choice for deer, but you can also apply for the dove hunts and have three choices across the state for that. You have three choices for upland hunts, three choices for antlerless hunts. So there's you can get a lot more on there. Our computer draws it. If we don't have enough first choice people to fill a hunt, it goes to the second choices.
So something I'm going to bring up is, like I said, when we were doing a little bit of research for this podcast episode, astounded by how many opportunities were made available. I'm just going to quickly rattle this off because I want people to realize how many opportunities are out there just this fall and winter alone. So through the Special Hunts Program, Wildlife and Parks' Special Hunts Program, 160 deer hunts, 9 dove hunts, 104 duck and goose hunts, 2 open fur bearer hunts, 3 fall turkey hunts, 85 upland hunts, and 37 whitetail antlerless only hunts have been made available to the public. That's incredible. And like Mike said, some of those hunts have multiple permits. We have close to 750 hunt permits that were made available through this program. So opportunity definitely abounds.
And talking about our employees, a lot of them are shy away from it a little bit because they want people to be successful and everything else. And it's just, it's these opportunities that are out here are quality experiences, better than average chance of success, and it's a do-it-yourself for the most part. And Tana, we mentioned about people not comfortable with how to do that stuff, but our managers are making sure that if you don't know anything about duck hunting, we have some of our hunts have decoys available for geese and for ducks, and it's just our folks are more than willing to help you out.
And I've got a little bit of a personal story there. So I was lucky enough to serve as a mentor on a hunt, on a special hunt at Benedictine Bottoms. And I have to give a big shout out to Kirk because he was absolutely fantastic, the area manager out there, at making sure that my mentee and I felt comfortable, that we kind of knew some good areas to go, because obviously I was driving from quite a fair distance away and didn't really get to get out there and like look at the area. He helped us, gave us some incredible advice, helped us get the deer back and transported back to the vehicle. It was just such a great opportunity. And you guys have heard me talk about this gal, Amy, before, but she is a single mother, just rocking life out there as a female hunter and bringing this meat home and putting it on the table to feed her family. And I just think that she's such an incredible success story of this program. So I wanted to give a shout out to Kirk at Benedictine Bottoms and then ask you, Mike, what are some of your favorite stories that you've heard come out of the Special Hunts program?
Just over the weekend itself, I was at Cedar Bluff and we ran into a father and son that had hunted Trigo County. Kansas State University has some research land out there. And this father and son went out and they killed two bucks and a doe on that hunt. And they got them all in one day. And they were talking about how hard it was to drag three deer off of this property going through that and wore out, but the smiles on their face. So I asked the young man, I said, did you get a good one? Well, not real big, but the smile on his face told me that it was every bit the magical thing that he wanted to have. We had at this same property, a gentleman, it was a youth hunt then on that one. This was a youth mentor hunt, but the youth hunt out there, his son had got the drawing as an underserved one. The out west properties often have not as good of applications as well and great opportunities. So this guy took his son out. He killed a very nice deer on the property. The next year he drew again. The son did. Went out and shot a bigger deer. So the dad comes into the Hayes office and he's showing us pictures, just talking about how great of an opportunity. This is his son's first deer and then the second deer, bigger than the one before. The third year, this young man draws again.
What?
He comes in, the dad comes in and says, look at this picture. Bigger deer yet, 3 years in a row. 4 year. Boy gets the permit again, comes in, dad comes in, look at this picture, a bigger deer then. And he's just progressing through it. And the light in the father's eyes are just, you know, talking not only how proud he is of his son, but just the experience being with them. And he says, but it's going to stop now because my son's too old. He can't apply for, he can't
for
apply, can't apply for a youth permit anymore. But he's, you know, he's had those things. The hunters we have for the open hunts at Meredizine and just any other one, archery is mostly what we've got for those hunts. Resident, non-resident, the number of deer that they don't see on these properties. They're just ecstatic on what they're seeing. Hope I get the draw next year. I hope I get the draw next year. We had a mentor hunt. It was a mentor novice. So any age beginning hunter. And we had a husband put in for his wife. And the wife didn't know really how to, you know, she'd never been out before and doing that kind of stuff. And this was at Jamestown. And the story back that they told our manager there on the property of the hunt and the wife, you know, which happens to any novice hunter, I don't care, male, female, whatever, is the shakes and the heavy breathing and
oh yes.
Yeah. And doing that stuff. And this guy was, and then he starts talking about, but I think my heart was beating harder than hers. And I think my breath was, you know, shorter than hers and stuff like that. So just there's story after story and all these years we've been doing it. Just some great, great experiences.
So there's our new tagline, KDWP Special Hunts. So good, it'll give you the shakes.
I love it.
Didn't know I could tap dance until I shot my first deer. And then, yeah, that leg started doing double time in the tree stand.
So we do get some video once in a while, too, of some of these going through it. And there was one spring turkey hunt that right there in the blind, the covered blind, and the Tom is standing out there and you just hear, go ahead, take a shot, go ahead now. And finally the shot goes. And in the video, you can absolutely see that the blast of the BBs is going right over that turkey's head.
Oh, wow. No.
Just, you could see it just missed it.
Oh, man.
you hear the gun rack another round and boom, and that thing goes down, you know, and it's just fun to see the recovery and able to do that. So yeah, we encourage people to send us the pictures and it's neat stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to tell folks where they can find information on this. So there's a few different outlets, first being ksoutdoors.com. So if you go to that website, you click on the hunting tab, there's going to be an option on the left-hand side that says special hunting programs or hunting programs for you. And that's where you can find information about special hunts, everything from instructions on how to apply, including past season successes, right? So how many hunts were made available, how many permits were issued. So you can get a little bit of historical data to kind of get an idea of what might be offered in the next year. And something else I'll note, Mike, isn't that kind of that information, isn't it kind of fluid up until the point that people apply? Don't we kind of sometimes throw in some extra little kickers?
Oh, yeah. You know, when our folks and whatever, whether they're in the Corps of Engineers or Fish and Wildlife Service, we have a period that they have to get those hunts entered. Sometimes our biologists are not able to sign up a landowner until after that. We actually go live with the number of stuff. Sometimes a manager says, I don't know if we're going to really have good conditions. And so we add them in after that. So watch the website. I've always posted those as soon as we get them listed on there. Hey, you might have missed this opportunity. And then we try to promote some of those under applied for ones also, or special opportunities. I'll give one away right now. Is the Nature Conservancy has a ranch out in Logan County, and they offer one hunt, one deer hunt for a youth, and that hunt is for a mule deer or a white-tailed deer.
Nice.
Nobody else, you know, has the opportunity to kill a mule deer going through that stuff, and likely chance of seeing some really nice mule deer. It's a youth hunt, so the youth has to have it, and the youth has to have a mule deer stamp for it. But again, most of the people that apply are just thinking it's a youth whitetail either sex permit, and they don't take advantage of that mule deer permit. So we try to have the applications done, you know, going on in a time that all of the deer licenses have already been issued. And so you should know if you have a mule deer, here's an opportunity for your youth to do that.
Yeah. So definitely bookmark the special hunts page. Like Mike said, that information is always changing. You can also access information about the special hunts program in any copy of Kansas's hunting and fur harvesting regulation summary. And then be sure to check out the department's Facebook page, social media accounts, and occasionally news releases, which will cover special hunts deadlines that are approaching. So lots of different ways that you can stay up to date on the information. Mike, what else do people need to know about special hunts?
You know, we've been talking about access. We've been talking about places to go. We've been talking about, I don't know how to do this. I don't know. And people don't realize that our folks are as passionate about outdoors and getting new people out there, and they want to do that and they want to help. You call any of our folks and say, you know, where should I go? What can I do? And they're finding out. When you get into the special hunt program, it's this limited thing. They all get a list of people. Sometimes they send emails out to those people saying, hey, here's what you're likely to find when you're out there. But get to know our folks. Get to know our folks and find out what the opportunities are and what they can go. If you draw a permit, one thing I see is people wait till the very last minute. They get the email saying, congratulations, you've got a hunt here. And then 2 days beforehand, they're calling me up going, I can't get my permit printed and where should we go? And something like that. I said, didn't you check that out beforehand? Haven't you done this? Our folks are fantastic in making this a good opportunity, making it a quality thing. We've tried to get the information out about special hunts, websites and Facebooks and everything else. And it still seems to be one of those things that just is out there. Oh, I kind of heard about that, but I don't really know much about it. And hopefully today they're finding out a little bit more.
Yeah, And I'm betting the folks who have benefited might be staying kind of quiet about it. When we're returning 3 and 4 years in a row, we like that.
I hear that all the time when we've been to the state fair and promoted stuff there. And they're going, well, I didn't know anything about it. And somebody else goes, don't be telling people about about these hunts going through it. So it's, yeah. But we have so many people. I go back to what Bruce Taggart said way before, is if we can give a person a good opportunity once a year, and then they're likely to come stay in the hunting fold and continue to come out and do it. And that's what we, you know, what you gals know that more than anybody, is the people that we lose to a hunting community because other things take over, or they've gone out and they've hunted and not seen anything, or whatever else. And these are just good experiences to get them out again and again.
Well, Mike, you've had an incredible 40-year career, and I hope that you are so proud of that, because I've been really proud to have known you just for the past couple of years. You are so quick to share praise with all of the others that are involved in this program, with the local land managers and staff that help make this program possible. But I want to give our listeners an opportunity to thank you. So if you all listened to the podcast today and learned a little bit about our special hunts program, if you've benefited from the special hunt in the past and had a great experience, help us congratulate Mike on his 40-year career. Help us tell him thank you for all of his hard work. Send us a letter, Attention Flatlander Podcast. We're with KDWP at 512 Southeast 25th Avenue in Pratt, Kansas, 67124. And make sure you put that Attention Flatlander on there, and we'll get all of those letters to Mike. And just let him know how much that we all appreciate him and appreciate the opportunities he's helped coordinated in the background to make this program possible. So thanks, Mike.
Hear, hear.
Thank you very much. It's been a joy.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. I sincerely hope that people are listening closely, that they benefit from this program, and we will certainly not forget that you have played a key role in bringing it here into 2021, still going strong, more hunts being added all the time. So kudos, and just to mirror what Tana said, thank you.
And remember, February will start the new application period.
That's right. Don't forget the deadline.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Alrighty, folks. Well, it's been wonderful having you join us for another episode of the Flatlander Podcast. Be sure to check us out on social media to like, share, and subscribe. And of course, leave us a review and let us know how we're doing.
And remember, flat is a state of mind.
Flatlander Podcast is made possible through a partnership between the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks and the Kansas Wildlife Federation. Sound and production by Megan Mayhew. Music by Kansas locals The Box Turtles. Become a member of KWF for free by visiting kansaswildlifefederation.org. And be sure to follow KWF on Facebook at Kansas Wildlife Federation and on Instagram at KS Wildlife Fed. Stay up to date on all things KDWP by following the department on Facebook at Kansas Wildlife and Parks and on Instagram at The KDWP. Remember, the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks is supported by flatlanders like you through the sale of licenses and permits. Consider buying a hunting or fishing license today to conserve and protect the wild spaces and faces that make Kansas more than flyover country.